This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, January 11th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for the Wall Street Journal. The world's largest tech show begins today. And while CES is normally an event where conference goers get to test out all kinds of new and emerging tech, this year, the whole show is happening virtually. It's also the 20th anniversary of our personal tech editor, Wilson Rothman's very first CES. On today's episode, he'll join us to talk about what the process of going all virtual was like and what to watch for at this year's event. That's after these headlines. After the Capitol building was mobbed by Trump supporters last week, tech companies are continuing to take big steps to limit the spread of content that they say could incite further violence. Here's a roundup from the weekend. Twitter permanently banned President Trump's personal account after an earlier temporary ban. Then Apple and Google suspended Parler, a free speech-focused social media network that many conservatives have turned to as an alternative to more mainstream platforms like Twitter and Facebook, after those companies began taking steps to more aggressively moderate content. Apple and Google said Parler didn't do enough to take down threats of violence, and their decision made Parler's app inaccessible via either company's app store, though people could still access Parler via the internet. Until Amazon said that starting at midnight Pacific time Sunday night, it would no longer provide cloud computing services to Parler, effectively taking Parler's website offline and no longer storing the site's data. While some have lauded the actions from Twitter, Apple, Google, and Amazon, some conservatives say it unfairly censors their viewpoints. Parler's CEO accused the companies of using their power to kill competition in the marketplace. After the Wall Street Journal reported that the two were in advanced talks, the streaming distributor Roku has agreed to acquire the rights to content from Quibi, the defunct streaming app that shut down last year. A person familiar with the matter said Roku paid significantly less than $100 million for the shows. By the way, we talked about what's in this deal for both companies last week. You can check that episode out in the feed. And Tesla CEO Elon Musk has overtaken Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos as the richest person in the world, in part because of the meteoric rise in the value of Tesla. Musk is now worth around $195 billion, just beating out Bezos by about $10 billion. All right, coming up after the break, how CES organizers took the event virtual this year and what it could mean for the consumers and tech companies that attend. That's next.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Today begins CES. It used to be known as the Consumer Electronics Show, and it's the world's largest tech show. If it were a normal year, you'd probably be seeing an influx of pictures and videos from the event right about now, a bunch of weird and innovative technologies seemingly from the future. But it's not a normal year, and CES is still going ahead, albeit virtually. Our personal tech editor, Wilson Rothman, is a two-decade CES veteran, so we got him on the line to talk about the impact of a virtual CES and what else you should expect. Hey, Wilson, thanks for joining me.
Hi. Yeah, my badge of honor and shame. It is my 20th anniversary of my first CES.
Definitely a badge of honor in my book. So let's start with the basics. What is CES? What is this event actually for?
So it is really the global crossroads for the tech industry. I mean, you know, lately we've seen the tech industry dominated by a handful of players like Amazon and Apple and Google. But the fact is, all the machines, all the chips, all the gadgets that we've seen all through the years, TVs, yeah, phones, you name it. This is a huge ecosystem. This is thousands and thousands of companies, retailers, manufacturers, you know, researchers, and they all need to meet somewhere. You know, they all need to talk about what they're doing. And this is where it happens. You have people from all over the world. Last year, there were 4,500 exhibitors. and nearly 200,000 attendees in Las Vegas.
So typically a really big show. And from what I hear, the atmosphere is a really big part of CES. What were your experiences like?
I mean, it's crazy. It's a circus, you know. I mean, obviously, when you show up as a reporter, you get whisked into these crazy experiences. I've fired a computer-assisted sniper rifle. You know, you ride around in self-driving cars, you meet robots. I once took the controls of a Fujifilm blimp that was in flight. But yeah, it's like, you know, it's that. Plus, everywhere you turn, there's somebody who's telling you something super nerdy that you didn't know about, like, you know, what's going on behind a TV set, or you know, how a machine can be powered remotely from with radio waves. I mean, these are you learn so much, and everyone's just, it's like a free for all. But you know, it's a free for all of coughing and sneezing, and you know, everyone's coming off of their holiday parties and sharing whatever germs they picked up with you. So it's that too. I mean, it's a mess.
Right. And this is definitely not the year for spreading any more germs than absolutely necessary. But it sounds like this is a really experiential event. It's all about being there in person. So if you're an organizer of CES, how do you go about taking an event like that virtual?
At first, they were going to do a hybrid thing where people who could show up would show up in person, and people who couldn't would be able to participate online. And then by July of this past year, they were like, nope, we're completely going online. And they knew they couldn't replicate all the things I just described. I mean, it's just too much. There's too much going on to replicate. But they wanted to build some sort of system where people could see what other companies were up to and what they're sharing. They wanted to help people connect with one another. I mean, this is what people go to these shows for. So the CES organizers, it's called the Consumer Technology Association, CTA, they just really wanted to build some sort of functional tool for that part of the show to happen, even if the glitz and glam just won't really be the part of it.
And so what is it actually going to look like this year?
It looks different for every exhibitor. Basically, you come into this website and it looks a lot like the website that the, you know, CES has had in years past when you're just trying to find where a booth is or something. But then instead of clicking on something and just getting a little info, you click into that company's experience. And that can be as minimal as like a couple contacts, a little bit of briefing about the company and a video. But it could also be something immersive. Like I spoke with Canon, you know, the camera maker, and they've got this really wild experience where you kind of dive in, you shoot around the world, you can go to Kawasaki, Japan, and check out this 3D imaging system that they've built. You can go up into space and check out one of their satellites, and you can actually ride the satellite around the Earth and take pictures of different spots that the satellite can really see. I mean, that's kind of, you know, going to the extreme of what you can do. And also they're excited because they're actually doing something that they wouldn't necessarily have done on the show floor. So in some senses, there's an upside there. But again, no one is saying it'll replicate the experience of being at the show itself.
And how are the participants, the attendees, the businesses, the innovators, how are they responding to this change in format? Are we seeing the same level of enthusiasm as in previous?
Definitely not. I mean, the enthusiasm is not all there. I should say it's COVID times. People are reacting the way you'd expect. They're not like, yay, we're going to do this. They're like, I guess we have to do it this way this year. So what that means in numbers, you know, like I said, 4,500 exhibitors came last year. You know, this year they're looking at somewhere between 1,700 and 2,000. So it's a lot less. And by the way, the cost was minimal. So a lot of people I talked to who are exhibiting there said they're doing it because it was $1,200 for their company to participate. So for companies not to do it, it really shows that they're just not interested. Also, of course, with the supply chain issues that have come from COVID, and also a lot of the tariff issues that we've seen this past year, especially with China, there's certain lack of productivity and lack of enthusiasm there that isn't necessarily having to do with whether the show is online or in person.
And Wilson, you said before that this is really a place where nascent businesses and technologies can kind of pitch themselves to customers and other innovators. But it seems like some kinds of technology, like you mentioned Canon before, are more able to adapt to this kind of virtual setup than others. So what's the impact for the companies of the event going virtual?
I think the impact will be felt differently by different kinds of companies. I think your established companies, I mean, Samsung and LG kind of dominate CES. And, you know, they don't even have to do that. They have their own networks of manufacturers. They have their own retail networks. But CES is kind of where they come to shine. This is just as good for them. You know, even smaller players that have brands that are recognizable, like the accessory maker Belkin, they're doing stuff around CES, but they're not going to be there. They don't have any problem with sitting this one out. They don't think it'll affect their momentum in any way. But there are small startups that would get a leg up by being somewhere where, you know, either reporters like us or investors who are looking for the next cool thing, they could just stroll down this one alleyway called Eureka Park at the physical CES, and you just kind of wander through and you wouldn't know what to expect. A lot of it's kids just building cool robots and things like that. And there's a lot less chance that they will get noticed this year. It's a weird year.
It is a weird year. All right, Wilson, you're going to be attending this event in this weird year. What are you going to be watching for through your screen?
I mean, I'm always on the lookout for cool TVs because this was traditionally a TV show, and I don't think we're going to be disappointed this year. There's LG Display, which is kind of the component part of LG's TV business, is going to have a 55-inch transparent OLED screen, which means it looks like a piece of glass, but then you can have fully like opaque images appearing on it. One example they used was a sushi bar, where the sushi menu can appear kind of animated in front of you. And it also serves as a plexiglass barrier between you and the sushi chef. So it's kind of got a little COVID angle. And this year, you would not be surprised to know that a lot of them are COVID inspired. Our friend Joanna Stern will be covering this in a great deal this week. But the idea is, you know, between UV lights that sit over your laptop and maybe like disinfect while you're not around, portable air purifiers. I thought that was kind of an interesting idea. Smart masks, of course, it's our new favorite topic, the smart mask. And here's my favorite, an AI-enabled sink. So it's got like a camera pointed and it like dispenses soap and it only turns the water on when you've scrubbed your hands long enough that it's like confident that you've rid your hands of germs.
Sounds like a lot to look out for this week. Our personal tech editor, Wilson Rothman, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Amanda.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. You can find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us in your app store. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.